One man in a courtroom watches a video no one else in the room is allowed to see. Everything around him is ordinary. Lawyers at their tables, a stenographer typing, a bench, a flag. Then the footage reaches the moment of the gunshot, and his own body answers before he says a word. He jolts backward in his chair. The court's own camera catches it. The video itself stays sealed, locked away from the public. His reaction does not. Within a day, it is circulating nationally. The only public evidence so far of what a Provo, Utah courtroom watched on the opening day of the preliminary hearing into the killing of Charlie Kirk. You're listening to Civic Intelligence. This is the story of 4 days inside that courtroom. A flinch caught on tape. A former partner's recorded account of what he says was a confession. And a widow's request the judge turned down. All of it filtered through one rule that does not bend for this show or any other. The man charged in this case, Tyler Robinson, is charged, not convicted. He has entered no plea on the merits. He is presumed innocent, and every fact in this episode comes from testimony and exhibits prosecutors put in front of a judge, not from a verdict, because there isn't one. Charlie Kirk, the founder of Turning Point USA, was shot and killed on September 10, 2025, at a Turning Point event on the campus of Utah Valley University. Tyler Robinson, 23 years old, was taken into custody the next day. 9 months later, the case had barely moved. No plea entered, repeated defense delays. Until 4 days of testimony opened on July 6, 2026, in Provo's 4th District Court, before Judge Tony Graff. A preliminary hearing like this one decides only whether the state's evidence clears probable cause, a low bar, not whether Robinson is guilty. No jury sits for it. Guilt is a question for a trial that hasn't been scheduled. Day one belonged to the state's opening evidence. Chief Deputy Utah County Attorney Chad Grunander presented for the prosecution. Lead defense counsel Catherine Nestor, with co-counsel Richard Novak and Michael N. Burt, represented Robinson. Among the state's exhibits was video of the shooting itself, filmed from close behind Kirk. According to multiple outlets that covered the hearing, Judge Graff ruled that he alone would view it, muted, out of what the court described as sensitivity to the Kirk family, and that it would not be shown to the courtroom or broadcast. What the public did get was the judge's face. As the footage reached the shot, Graff visibly flinched, jolted in his chair, according to multiple accounts of the courtroom feed. Sitting in the gallery that day were Robert and Catherine Kirk, Charlie Kirk's parents, coming face to face with Robinson for the first time since the shooting. The clip of Graff's reaction spread the next day after Brandon Tatum, a friend of Kirk's and a former Tucson police SWAT officer, posted it online. This may have been the most difficult moment of today's hearing. The judge visibly flinched as footage of Charlie Kirk being shot was shown in court, praying for Erica and Charlie's family. That's Brandon Tatum's caption, as reported by outlets covering the hearing. The clip he posted does not show the shooting. It shows only a judge's posture, reacting to something the public still hasn't seen. On day two, prosecutors pivoted to physical evidence. A Utah state investigator, Sergeant Jennifer Falmuina of the state's SBI, testified about surveillance footage and DNA analysis that investigators say connects Robinson to the rooftop firing position and the recovered rifle. It was the groundwork the state would build the rest of its case on. The hearing's most consequential testimony came on day four from Lance Twiggs, Robinson's former romantic partner and roommate in St. George, Utah. Twiggs testified through a recorded law enforcement interview, not live questioning, after being granted use immunity, protection for his own statements from being used against him, not blanket immunity from all charges, and not, on its own, proof that what he says is true. It's the tool prosecutors reach for when a witness has information they need, but reason to fear self-incrimination, which is presumably why a man who lived with Robinson and had obvious motive to say as little as possible agreed to sit for a recorded interview that investigators later played in open court. In that interview, prosecutors say, Twiggs described Robinson confessing to him twice. The first was a handwritten note left under Twiggs's keyboard addressed to a nickname, Luna, that Robinson reportedly used for him. According to reporting on its contents, the note read, in part, I left the house this morning on a mission. I had the opportunity to take out Charlie Kirk and I took it. The same day, prosecutors say, Robinson texted Twiggs, I'm sorry, and I had enough of his hatred. Some hate can't be negotiated out. A second text, read into the record, I'm still okay, my love, but I'm stuck in Orem for a little while longer yet. I had hoped to keep this secret till I died of old age. I am sorry to involve you. The second alleged confession, Twiggs told investigators, came in person, the day after the shooting. He was walking around a lot, Twiggs said in the recorded interview. He started crying a little bit and says he wishes he hadn't done it. Prosecutors also entered Discord messages alongside the note and the texts before resting their case on July 9th. Material the state says is consistent with the same alleged confession. None of that reached the courtroom without a fight. A Utah SBI agent, Brian Davis, was the state's witness for introducing the recording, 37 minutes long, reading and playing portions of it. Before any of it played, defense attorney Richard Novak raised constitutional concerns about broadcasting what he called, in effect, a pretrial confession, arguing it risked prejudicing Robinson's right to a fair trial before a jury was even selected. Judge Graff ordered 16 minutes of the recording redacted, and prosecutors delayed playback by a full day to comply before the redacted version was finally played. It's the same objection defense attorneys raise in nearly every high-profile prosecution. Broadcasting the state's most damaging evidence to a national audience before trial risks tainting the jury that hasn't been picked yet. Outside the courtroom, the hearing became national news. Legal analyst Jonathan Turley, an outside commentator with no role in the case, was quoted separately calling the evidence of political motivation overwhelming. That's his assessment, and his alone. Judge Graff has issued no ruling on motive, intent, or guilt at any point in this hearing. A day before the recording fight was resolved, Erica Kirk, Charlie Kirk's widow, who now leads Turning Point USA, pushed the court to open up everything it had kept sealed. On day three, family attorney Jeff Niemann filed a motion asking Judge Graff to require every admitted exhibit be shown in real time to everyone in the courtroom, and to retroactively republish everything held back from the first 3 days. That would have covered the shooting video Graff alone had watched 2 days earlier. The Kirk family believes strongly that if the evidence is being admitted in this preliminary hearing, it should be made public for the world to see. No redactions, Niemann told the court, arguing that withholding evidence will create doubt and distrust in the judicial system. Judge Graff denied the motion. He kept the court's existing three-tiered method in place instead. Is an exhibit admitted at all? If admitted, is it shown to the gallery? And if shown to the gallery, is it broadcast to the public outside the courtroom? Graff said the ruling wasn't meant to diminish the Kirk family's concerns, but to protect Robinson's right to a fair trial, the identical concern Novak had raised a day later over the Twiggs recording. That denial is the reason the shooting video stayed sealed for the rest of the week, and the reason the Twiggs recording was ultimately heard only in its redacted form. Erica Kirk was asking the court, in the middle of an active hearing, to collapse three separate tiers: evidence admitted, evidence shown, evidence broadcast into one. Judge Graff kept them apart. The state rested on July 9th. On day 5, the defense called its final witness, and instead of closing arguments, Graff ordered both sides to submit written briefs on whether the evidence clears probable cause, with oral arguments now set for September 1, 2026, at 10 in the morning. No trial date has been set. That decision waits on Graff's ruling after those arguments. 9 months after the shooting, the posture hasn't fundamentally changed. No plea, no trial date. What 4 days of testimony produced instead was public evidence of a deliberately half-public case. Some of it circulated within a day of being shown to one man in a courtroom, some of it still sealed from everyone else. 4 days in Provo produced a judge visibly shaken by video the public still hasn't seen, a former partner's recorded account of a note and texts prosecutors call a confession, a fight over how much of that recording America was allowed to hear, and a widow's request, denied, to make all of it public. None of it is a verdict. Tyler Robinson is charged, not convicted, and the only question Judge Graff has agreed to decide by September is whether the state's evidence is enough to send this case to trial at all. Every quote, every ruling, and every alleged in this story is sourced to the outlets that covered this hearing, gavel to gavel. Civic intelligence didn't sit in that courtroom, and we're not pretending we did. Browse the fully documented version, with every citation attached, at civicintelligence.news in the Crime Problems section, and check every source for yourself. If this kind of accountability reporting is worth your time, subscribe to Civic Intelligence wherever you're hearing this, and we'll see you next episode.